Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 88. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. How are you doing, sir?
I'm hanging in here pretty good, I gotta say. It's good to be back in the recording studio, such as the, I guess it's a, is anywhere you record a studio, Kevin?
I would suppose so.
Yes, well then I guess we're definitely in the studio. You could call
anything a studio, yes. So.
This is for sure a studio.
It is definitely a rearranged studio, yeah. I think, from the last time that you were up here.
Things are looking different.
Yep. So trying to slim down and get a little more sleek look in the DeFrango household.
Yeah, I think it's working. But yeah, it's good to be back recording, putting out another show. Are we up to 90 yet, Kevin?
No, this was 88.
88. Okay, we're getting close.
Yep, we're getting there. We are still lagging behind Shahid and Jeremy, but we are trying not to lose too much ground at the current moment.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't like to, you know, try to measure myself against other people. There's always, you know...
There's always next year.
There's always next year, but then there's always... No, that's not what I mean to say. I meant to say there's always, you know, the arguments like quantity versus quality. So it depends on how you look at things, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yep. Well, Ken,
I'm just saying. Many people are saying this. That's all.
We strive for quality and quantity here at OPA.
Absolutely.
Or in Stunt Granny in general.
Or the greater umbrella brand, yes.
Yes, the greater umbrella brand. Oh, man. Well, there were some other people that strived for quality and quantity. Well, actually, maybe not quantity.
No, the opposite of quantity, probably. Yeah,
it's a possibility that there were not very many. How did you say the name of the machine?
I believe it was the Antikythera mechanism. Was a device that was found buried at the bottom of the, well, not buried, I guess, but it was sunk at the bottom of the sea. Lost in a shipwreck for thousands of years.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that seems like the right saying there. But, yeah, it was kind of interesting that it was found in 1901. So people have been looking at this for quite some time. But obviously with a lot of other things, the shift in technology has allowed people to go back and look at this mechanism that is quite corroded.
Yeah, it probably, if you didn't know what you were looking at, wouldn't think it was too much to look at. So I could see it getting kind of overlooked in favor of some other, you know, everybody likes to look at some good clay, you know, pottery.
Bronze sculptures.
Bronze sculptures that they found, you know. Along beside this this mechanism, but after somebody did get around to looking at it, and as you said, with using some modern technology, the X-rays and all that good stuff, they were able to see that this was actually a very complicated device. That
it was. Some people are terming it the world's first computer.
That could be taking things a little far, just because it. You know, there was a lot of things that sounded like it was able to do, but it wasn't like a, I guess, general-purpose computer that could calculate anything or basically run any program.
Yeah, and you couldn't really program it yourself.
Right.
This was a self-programmed device that provided, like you said, a somewhat limited amount of information.
Sure. I mean, maybe a Palm Pilot of the ancient world. You know, it wasn't quite a smartphone, but it could tell you a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah, it was fairly, I mean, it's pretty impressive. A, it was hand crank, So I thought that was not surprising, considering that one of the first cars was hand crank, you know.
Yeah.
The any type of machine seems to have started off with
yeah, to be able to calculate or represent all of the different things that it can, which it includes, like, well, apropos of earlier this week, Kevin, it can be used to predict eclipses.
Yes.
So that is handy. Also able to show you handy information like when the next athletic competition in Rhodes is going to be, if they're scheduled at regular intervals, apparently. Also, yeah, they seem to think that it could predict the weather, and I'm not sure how true that is exactly.
Yeah, because they mocked even modern weather weather forecasts, which I will admit, for the most part, they are a bit closer. The whole rain thing is a little hit or miss.
Well, you know, I've...
But temperature-wise, things are quite accurate at this juncture.
Yeah, you're right about that. And they can tell you generally, you know, higher pressure, lower pressure, there's a cool front moving in. But when it gets to things like the percentage chance that it's going to rain, and this is something that's bothered me, maybe there's some meteorologists out there in the audience who can help us with this one. But how, when someone says that there's a 50% chance of rain tomorrow, does that mean someone who's hearing that broadcast has, it's a 50% chance for them? Or is it a 50% chance for anyone in that area to get rained on?
I usually feel like there's a place that they take the weather from. I feel like a lot of times it's out at the airport. So I would have to say that it probably favors that area, which would be where you live, essentially.
Yeah.
If I'm accurate in saying that from the news.
I guess what I'm saying, like, is it going to... Is there a 50% chance that it's going to rain over the whole area, or I don't know. I feel like I'm not making myself very clear here. Or is
well, I mean, it's a pretty large area that most of these things are covering. Because I mean, the wife and I work in very different parts of town. There are times where I will see rain and she will not. And vice versa. So, yeah, I mean, even just the local station, there's a lot of territory that you're covering that, I guess I don't know how the 50% works.
Yeah, it's a confusing thing to me, and I don't think I'm quite, I wasn't prepared to talk about it here this evening. This is, I don't appreciate your gotcha questions here, Kevin.
The gotcha questions that you brought up.
Yeah, exactly.
It's finally tailgate season.
Whoa.
This season, join Byers Auto and FanFest.
But, every Ohio State. It is a strange thing. If you try to figure out what does that mean, a 50% chance, because I assume that means, like, if you were to replay that day, like, oh, you know, 10 times, 5 of those times it would rain.
5 of those times it wouldn't.
Right. But does that mean that 5 of those times it would rain for you as someone who is hearing this? Or does it just mean that it would rain for someone in the region?
You would have to ask the forecaster.
Okay. I think that's about as good as I can explain my problem here.
much like one of our very nosy condo unit owners who asked, what's Columbia doing out there? And I was like, I don't know. I don't work for Columbia.
Maybe that, you could go ask them.
That, yeah, she could too, if she really wants to know.
Oh, no, that was my advice for her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she could definitely do that. So I suggest you ask your meteorologist.
This is a good question, and I may have more to report back later on this one. Let's put a pin in this one for now.
Yeah, so I don't know if the Greeks were just planning for the weather in Rhodes, or if they were planning for the weather in other parts of the country. You know, if they were trying to forecast the weather, it would have been a little rough. They're covering more territory than I would say a modern meteorologist does, which is, you know, usually several counties, but not a small country like Greece.
Well, and they said that this ship was bound for Rome, apparently, to have these items sold to some wealthy people who lived there. So I really doubt that the weather thing would hold up for those people. I mean, it probably is a pretty similar climate, but you were talking quite a bit of separation there.
Yeah, Italy is quite a bit to the west.
So they may not have been... And then I don't know if they were even... They probably did not use percentages on the mechanism. I'm not sure exactly. But it...
Yeah, they've described some of them, but they did not exactly specify that there was an exact temperature gauge. They were using Celsius back in Greece.
Apparently there was at least 30 gears involved in the construction of this mechanism. Oh.
Right.
And that has surprised a lot of people because of the intricateness and the precision that's required to have all these gears turn together and, you know, work together to come up with these different calculations. So
yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive because they have, the eclipses. They basically had where you could figure out where the Earth was going around the Sun. Like, it basically had a calendar built into it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and it had three different types of calendars, in fact.
And I believe that it also kept track of, like, where the Moon and some of the other planets were, too.
The five known planets, they said. So, I would imagine that, oh, no, I'm going the wrong direction.
I think
Mercury is closest to us, and then...
Mercury's closest to the Sun.
Oh.
And then there's Venus, Earth, Mars.
I was doubting myself on Venus. I was thinking that was further out for some reason.
No, that one is the second planet, and pretty much the same size as Earth. Except has a runaway greenhouse effect, and apparently... Metal can melt on the surface, so that's not a great place to be.
sounds a little balmy.
Yeah.
Like it's worse than Charlotte.
Yeah, it really gets hot there. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a dry heat or not. I'm not sure it matters at that point.
It's a dry heat. It's not that bad.
It's a dry heat. Water is... actually cannot form here, so it has to be a dry heat.
Okay, so Mercury, Venus, Earth, and I have really forgotten my planets at this point.
Mars would be the next one out.
Oh, yeah. And I was born on Mars. How did I forget
that? Yeah, that's really bad form on your part there, forgetting where you came from. And then Mars is the last of the rocky planets. And then we can move on to Jupiter, the first of the gas giants. I wonder, I guess they must have seen Jupiter, huh?
Yeah.
Being as a... It's far out there, but I guess it's big enough, probably, that it's can be seen. Just my guess.
It is quite... I believe it's the largest of the planets.
Yes,
despite its gaseousness.
That is true. It's a big one. It's not quite big enough to be a star, basically. If it was a bit bigger, it could have became a star.
Oh, I did not realize that.
Well, I think it might have had to be quite a bit bigger, but...
Oh.
If it would have been...
It's just on the outside reaches.
Yeah, yeah. Because it just needs to, needs to compress those hydrogen atoms enough to form... to start fusing, and then look out.
Gotcha. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. Because it is basically a ball of hydrogen. for the most part. As you said, a gas giant.
Gas giant. Well, yeah.
Stock
lingo on that one that I've heard recently. So
yeah,
we've had enough space topics that I would think I'd be a little more brushed up on this.
Well, I don't think we've been talking about exoplanets lately, so you probably aren't that keyed in on the local scene here. Yeah.
Yep, I like to drink local beer, but I don't know about my local planets.
Yeah,
I've just given them up for exoplanets, hoping that we find life on other planets.
Right. Well, there's other people who have thought about that recently too, Kevin. But I don't know if I don't think we've actually found them as of yet. But that might be spoiling things a little bit to talk about at this point. So, yeah. This probably would have been a cool thing to have, like, on your mantelpiece or something back in those days. In ancient Greece times, I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, they did say that they kind of used it as a restroom book. Of a coffee table book of sorts.
Right. But it is interesting that people really wouldn't have thought that this existed, since it wasn't really mass produced. And, you know, I wondered...
They did bring up one idea, which is not entirely shocking, is that metal was fairly rare. So these devices could have been melted over the years and repurposed.
Right.
Which would not be entirely surprising either, because that was one of the things that even the new research mentioned, is that some of the parts of this machine might have already been recycled.
Yeah, like, I don't think it is a... it's not like a need to have. So, like, if it was... Maybe you're, like, thinking you need to have a new
sword
or something like that to defend yourself. You might sort of say, well, this is cool and all, but I'm just going to melt this down.
Yeah, especially when you have 35 gears. I'm going to guess that this is a fairly decent chunk of metal.
Yeah, and I guess it just makes you think that, like, we're kind of used to things always getting... you know, more advanced, more technology. But this was kind of invented at the time when the Greeks were at their pinnacle, and then kind of went down from there. And so a lot of the stuff was lost. It makes you wonder, like, what other stuff could have been lost, I guess.
Oh.
And maybe think would leave a trace that doesn't leave a trace, I guess.
Like aliens?
No. I was thinking of, like, the internet, because basically nothing...
Didn't the aliens give them this technology?
I don't think so.
Has that theory not been posited?
That was not covered in the article that we read. That's extracurricular, if not extraterrestrial, information there. That's a whole lot of extra. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, well, I always try to bring a whole lot of extra to this show. You know, it just attests to the quality of this show.
Yeah, it's undeniable. No one can deny it. I'm not sure where to go with this one at this point, actually. We were talking about... You know, when we first started talking about this...
Well, yeah, I think one of the points that you were trying to get to there that I derailed a little bit was just, and I think about it too, the Roman civilization, you know, there were definitely so many misgivings, but they also had, like, aqueducts and running waters and, like, city baths and everything like that. Like, they kind of ran a pretty tight ship. And a fairly clean one, too, you know, for ancient times.
Yeah, because they would have had, like you say, running water. I mean, and that would have been indoor, I guess, plumbing, which would have been something that wouldn't have been seen again for quite a while after the fall of the Empire there, so...
Yeah, and obviously this is another one of those pieces that, you know, because you're right, like, it was something of an extra, so it probably wasn't mass-produced.
Well, I don't know what was mass... I mean...
Yeah, it's...
If they didn't have a lot of metal, it probably that kind of stuff wouldn't have been mass-produced, but...
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, even if it had been... It actually wouldn't have left that much of a trace because if people would have, and I'm sure these would break down over time. You know, clocks and whatnot breaks down today for us. So anything that has that much many moving parts, I'm sure over time would eventually wear
down.
And then you melt it down, right? So for sure you're melting it down then, probably. But it just you know, something like that you would think would be preserved, but not necessarily. And
no, but it really could have, like you said, like if they had kind of maybe not viewed it as an extravagance, like they might have invented computers like 2,000 years before they were invented, essentially.
Yeah, I guess.
It really could have been a jump forward in technology at a much earlier age, which, you know, that's one of those, oh, let's do an alternate history of the world, and you could...
Like if there was no collapse of the...
Greek Empire.
It's like the Bronze Age, maybe, Bronze Age collapse, I think. But, yeah, if, like, that hadn't happened, then how would things have been different? Or, you know, if the Roman Empire hadn't fallen in the West... If they had been able to continue on without kind of having the, although you always read people talking about how it wasn't really all that bad in the, and I think we probably have mentioned it too, like it wasn't all that bad in the quote unquote Dark Ages, but it does seem like there was some backsliding there in some ways.
Yeah, there was definitely a little bit of backsliding going on there.
It's always fun to think of these historical what ifs, Kevin.
They are fun, but it is just really interesting that that some technology like this was around that early. Just in general, you know, even if it didn't push things forward, you know, the way we think of them now, like it's pretty interesting, you know. I guess to go back a little bit to the alien joke, isn't even really a joke, you know, just the ancient alien stuff. Like, I guess would people think that that was the technology that they gave us? I'm assuming.
Oh, you mean the,
Yeah, like ancient aliens on, is it on, History Channel usually? I believe. You know,
which is definitely something that shouldn't be on History Channel, by the way.
But it's history, Ken. It happened thousands of years ago when the aliens visited us.
Oh, man.
And they abruptly left. That's why these technologies didn't go any further, Ken.
That's why it didn't catch on.
Well... Ken, speaking of technologies, there is one that I would not have asked for. I'm not sure that you would have, but would you have ever thought to yourself, you know what, I need to be a one-man band?
I think what I probably would have thought of something like that, Kevin.
You were a big Trent Reznor fan.
That's right, yeah.
And he was a one-man band.
So, I feel like several people have been one man bands in their times. Let's think about that one, Kevin. Billy Corgan maybe from the Smashing Pumpkins.
But I think he had collaborators. Although he could do a lot of the music making, I think he pared it down to himself because he got tired of the other people in the process. I believe that's how that one worked. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, that could have been more about him.
This isn't about you. This is more about me.
Yeah, I believe he at least one of his albums recorded all the instruments. So that's what made me think of him. But I guess technically this is one instrument that we're talking about in this case. It's a YouTube video that I came across recently called The Marble Machine. And it's a bit... I just realized that marbles has been a topic that we've covered a couple times on this show.
Yes. You have enjoyed torturing me with marble content due to some past experiences with marbles.
It didn't seem like there was any collectible marbles involved in the making of this video.
No, this certainly looked like it was just some... steel ball bearings, essentially. In yeah. This, he was not using hand blown glass,
hand painted. Yeah, nothing like that.
It would have made. Well, there probably would have been a couple of interesting things here. Cause,
well, should we talk about what this is to start with?
Yeah, let's go with that.
You did say a one man band, and that is a way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, he played guitar.
I think it was like a bass guitar there. Yeah.
Well, I think there's just a regular guitar too.
Oh, well, we should say that these instruments, the sounds we're talking about, are all made by marbles dropping and hitting various things, such as the strings to a allegedly guitar, possibly bass guitar, a xylophone.
Yes.
Different cymbal.
Yeah, different drum objects.
Drums.
Because there's a snare.
Hmm.
Even along with the cymbal.
Yes.
So, yeah, they had any number of technologies on this thing.
And much like the Antikythera mechanism, this is also a hand-cranked... machine that turns, I don't know, maybe 30 gears. It looked like quite a few.
Yeah, I'm going to hazard a guess that it might have been more than 30. But it might be like just like 3 or something. Just to like, because a lot of it was so fascinating. Because, I mean, it's like the world's largest marble project that produces music. Like, normally when you see, like, a giant domino array...
Like a marble run or something?
Yeah, or a marble run. Like, there isn't really, like, some other thing involved. It's just... That's it. It's just a giant marble run that's impressive. And this is both an impressive marble run and, again, a one-man band situation. Like, it's crazy. Because there's just a lot of things that go into this.
Yes. So, like, there's these, like, two huge wheels that you can see with Lego pegs stuck into it at different intervals. And that's those are basically what allow the different marbles to fall down through their different tracks and hit the different instruments. So it is, like... we were saying, sort of like a computer in that you can program different songs by moving those little pegs around, which is going to affect what notes are played, slash what, you know, if it's going to play the drums or a cymbal, something, guitar, Kevin, like we talked about. Yeah, I mean, it can be it is an interesting machine, which I did find some more information about. He also posted a different video that talks more about how he created this machine, and then kind of like a post-mortem video where he's this machine ended up, actually, just to kind of give you an update here. It was donated to, like, a museum where he is from. And I forget. I think he's from somewhere like Germany or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, A, I was kind of interested, and maybe you know the answer, of whether this instrument was able to play more songs than he had had than he played in the video itself.
Well, yes, that's kind of what I was saying earlier. That those giant wheels, you could move the pegs around to play different songs.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, like, each kind of row of pegs, or each, yeah, I guess you could say row or column or whatever, around the wheel would control one note on the xylophone, or one drum sound, or one cymbal, one string of the guitar. So, I think there's, like, 8 or 10 different tracks that the marbles are falling down. And each one would hit a different thing. Oh. So, yeah, you could basically program the pattern that you wanted it to play. And I thought it was a pretty catchy song he did, too. So that was kind of nice, too.
Yeah, and that was, I'm like, oh, man, okay. So this guy comes up with a cool machine and knows how to play music well. Like, go fuck yourself. Like,
yeah. That's...
You know, that's just the jealousy in me speaking, and I'm okay with admitting that.
I can understand that response, yeah.
And it was a pretty cool video, like, just the way everything was set up.
The lighting and everything was neat, I thought, yeah.
Yeah, because he even had a walk-off where he stopped cranking it, so it just kind of let the music kind of slowly...
Wind down, yeah.
Wind down, and then he slowly turned off the lights on all the equipment. I'm just like, ah... And you gotta have a nice video, too.
That's well done. That's how you get over 2 million views, Kevin. Oh, no. No, this is a different video, actually.
Yeah, that's his second video that has 6.2...
Oh.
53 million views.
Yes, so that's how you get to 53.5 million views. you have to have some fancy lighting and be able to... construct or imagine and construct such a machine and then also come up with the music for it. So no biggie.
Yeah, we're not asking for too much here.
But yeah, the making of video is interesting too. But he basically was able to design the gears using a computer program, and then he printed it out on paper and like pasted it to wood, and then like used a handsaw to like cut the gears out that he basically printed, and then was able had to stitch the pieces of paper together over like a big area. So it was kind of time consuming, and apparently not very precise. So he said that the gears did not turn as smoothly as possible. So that
probably because it was hand sawn.
Yeah, exactly. Which when you think about it, it would have been the same for that Greek mechanism. I mean, it's not like they had machines there to computer controlled saws or anything, or even I don't know what kind of mold you would have, or you would have to make a hand mold, or at least I would think.
Yeah, right.
And then probably some futzing with. To make sure it's perfectly aligned with the other gears. But yeah, so this guy in some ways was, he basically came up with this on his own and just made it. And someday it could be lost to time as well, Kevin. But, I think it's pretty cool that it's on YouTube for now, at least.
It most likely will get lost. I think conventional instruments,
especially being built out of wood and like kind of MDF looking material,
yeah,
it's probably not going to last forever. But yeah. He's currently working on a follow-up machine, and like has a team of like engineer people helping him this time.
Oh.
But it's kind of like people over the internet and sort of like in their spare time, it seems like. So hopefully everything works out good for him. But he also has a 3D, or not a 3D printer, like a CNC machine. That's
a CNC music factory.
Yeah, he's going to make you sweat till you bleed. And then make you go, hmm.
Baby.
It did make me go, hmm, I gotta say. It was a pretty good little machine he put together there. Worth checking out.
Well, something else that made a lot of people go, hmm, was a ghostly radio station.
Kevin, we're back with that. That segue there, that's a return to form. Yes, Kevin, there is, a radio station that has been broadcasting since 1982, continuously. But they're not playing the hits, Kevin. This is not a top 40s.
No, although there is occasionally some information coming over this. Well, it's I believe a short wave length,
You're right. This is a short wave station, which means that it could be received basically anywhere in the world. I can remember. For some reason, my mom had a shortwave radio when I was growing up, and it was fun to play around with, because you could change the, you know, reception like a normal radio, but it had like a map of the world with it.
Uh-huh.
So, and like they said in this article, depending on like the time of day, you can expect frequencies to be coming in better from different parts of the world. And so it has like a map that shows you like... you know, frequencies for different areas and like what you could kind of turn to pick up on things. But it was neat to play around with, because you knew you could pick up radio stations from everywhere.
Okay.
Because the frequency that they're traveling at is short, right? Isn't that what we're talking about here? So
it's short wave. Yeah.
It's apparently able to like bounce off the clouds and the atmosphere and then come back down, instead of just kind of dissipating. So that's the difference in what allows the signals to travel so far. So this radio station could possibly be heard by people all around the world.
Yeah, and it emanates from Russia.
Hmm. Heard about those guys.
Yep.
And like we said, this goes back to the height of the, or well, at least, yeah, during the Cold War.
Yes.
So we should say that usually it's a droning sound is playing, as we said, not the hits, not the top 40 Russian hits even.
Yeah.
But it plays a dull monotonous tone every few seconds, joined by a second sound, some ghostly ship sounding its foghorn. Then the drone continues. But once or twice a week, a man or woman will read out some words in Russian, such as dinghy or farming specialist. And that's it. Anyone, anywhere in the world can listen in simply by tuning a radio to the frequency 4625 kilohertz. But,
Since reading this article, I have not turned to that station.
No, I haven't done it either. We should have, really, but no.
Just for research purposes, I could just listen to that at work all day long.
Yeah, you know, just to kind of really do the research that people probably are expecting of us here. but that is interesting. That part reminded me a little bit of, I think it was... the recent Avengers
like
movie. Oh, Spies Like Us. Now, I was thinking of the recent Avengers movie, I think. Civil War, was it? Where Bucky Dent is the Russian super weapon, and they, like, take him out of cold storage to read him these Russian words, and that, like, activates him. Does that sound familiar? The Winter Soldier?
I didn't see Civil War.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm bad. My bad on that one.
So that could be what's going on, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it could be. It does not seem to have awoken anything in particular
that can
be confirmed.
That the lamestream media is reporting for you. That's not what they don't want you to know about that kind of stuff. That's like those ancient aliens, Kevin. They keep that on the down low. But
they keep that hidden on the History Channel.
Yes. I'm sure there's something about these weird radio stations on the History Channel. But yeah, I mean, the speculation is rampant as to the true purpose of this. If it's not, you know, some kind of code words for the Winter Soldier, it could be for, you know, Russian spies, certainly.
Yeah, it could be. The messages are few and far between.
That could be something where they'd be like, okay, listen on Sunday at 6 p.m. or something like that and get your message. And then they'll... It does seem strange, though, doesn't it? I mean, like, so low tech. I mean, I guess this would be good, like, if there was something that hit, like, the global 40, internet.
40 years ago?
No, I mean, if it's something that, like, the internet is down all over the world. Like, I could see this maybe being handy. But then you've got to be, like, people have got to be, like, ready for that and, like, know how to... receive these messages and like remember to do that. So I don't know. It seems like it may not be that useful, but I guess if the shit ever went down, you could find this to be useful still even today.
Yeah, I guess that's what seems so odd about it. Like, it really doesn't seem like something that would be anyone can listen in. So if you can find some correlation to what's being said, you can kind of tie it to a place that it's being ordered from very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could shut it down if you thought there was a problem, because it that's the other thing. It does seem like it's known where it's being transmitted from also.
Right.
They say it's in two locations, a St. Petersburg site and a location near Moscow. But bizarrely, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the station's activity sharply increased. That is kind of strange, but...
Yeah.
I guess they're
still
using
it. The whole thing is strange. So, I mean, does this just make it more strange?
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit more strange, though.
Yeah, because it's already pretty strange. I've got to admit, it's pretty weird to be rolling with this.
Yeah, it. You, I don't believe, were a fan of the television show Lost, but that was famously part of the mythology. There was a number station on the island that was broadcasting a series of numbers over and over and over again, mysteriously. And this does remind me of, and I believe that this must have been kind of what that was based on.
Okay. Yeah, I did not have any problems with Lost. I just simply did not watch it.
Right. I didn't mean to say that you had a problem with it. I just know that you did not partake of that TV show.
No, I did not.
But yeah, this does remind me a little bit of that, and I'm sure others people out there who did see Lost will see the similarity. I mean, I don't want to speak for the audience, but I just think there could be people out there who that's familiar to.
Yeah, I mean, considering that this has been around since '82, I would imagine that some people are familiar with this thing, and that this is not the first article that.
Yeah, people have had their radios for quite some time, I believe.
Yeah. So, yeah, people have been listening to it. It's kind of weird and it's kind of strange. But, hey, if that's your thing, I mean, I remember my high school girlfriend's parents always listening to the police scanner. So, I mean, this is just to me a different version of the police scanner. Police scanner, a little more local.
That's true.
Shortwave station, a little more global in scope.
And there's probably more going on with the police station. I think it would be really weird if your old girlfriend's parents were listening to this weird droning, followed by a foghorn every few seconds.
And then
just 24 hours a day.
Every now and again, I'd hear someone grunt some Russian.
Yeah. Say dinging or farming specialist in Russian. Why do they keep saying farming specialist in Russian?
If I figured out what farming specialist was in Russian, I would be pretty happy with myself.
Well, they say after you listen to something for a while, you know, a language for a while, you can kind of start picking up on it. So, although it would be slow going if you're only hearing a few words every week or so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they keep on repeating the same ones, it would help you learn a certain word. But it would keep your vocabulary pretty limited.
I don't think they're going to be putting Rosetta Stone out of business anytime soon. But, apparently they found a new big dinosaur.
Oh my god. It was sitting there right for you. It's sitting there. You could have gone back to the Stone Age.
Oh, speaking of the stones, yes.
Oh, right there. It's definitely back. Me, good segue. You, bad segue.
We're returning to form. What can I say? And when I say dinosaurs, no, speaking of stones, we're not talking about the Rolling Stones. Also dinosaurs. Yeah, that's right. I just slammed the Rolling Stones.
What are we're not afraid. Do about it?
Yes. We're not afraid to burn that bridge here in Opa.
This was reported by your sister, Christine Phillips.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Good to know that she's out there covering this kind of stuff. The world's largest dinosaur. A new largest dinosaur may have been found.
This one is a, I guess I was kind of familiar.
Well, I don't want to, I was a little imprecise. I don't want to alarm anyone. Mm-hmm. They have not found a dinosaur in the world. We're talking about fossils. Sorry, I realized I could be panicking people out there. We're just talking fossils. There's not a real dinosaur that's running around, but which is good, I think.
Yeah, it's probably for the best that there's not a real dinosaur walking around.
And this was a big one.
Yeah, especially one that weighed 70 tons.
If you believe the article, and I don't think my sister would be lying to us, it's heavier than 10 adult African elephants. And the largest animal to ever walk on Earth. Now, that's a bit of a, carefully worded sentence there, because the blue whale is actually the largest animal to ever have lived on the Earth, which is, I believe, still alive. I haven't checked recently. But I know
they weigh more than 70 tons.
We like to be killing off our animals as humans, but the blue whale is definitely more than 70 tons. I had this looked up a moment ago, but Kevin is going to erase me. This is
is blue whale penis the third entry?
It has to be spectacular. I mean, I have not seen it.
Oh my lord, 173 tons? Good lord. That dwarfs the size of this dinosaur. It's more than double the size of this dinosaur.
In terms of weight, yes.
Yeah, in terms of weight.
So it's actually not as long as the dinosaur, but it's freaking huge. Yeah, that's an advantage to being in the water, is that you don't actually have to try to support something that huge, because you would basically just crush your body would just crush itself, basically, if you were on land.
Yeah, that's that old King Kong theory that I believe we've talked about, where if something works in a smaller size, if you just size everything up, it doesn't necessarily work that way.
Yeah, King Kong would like break his ankles just trying to walk, you know, all that good stuff. It would be bad for the blue whale to find himself on land. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, he would probably be screwed.
Yeah, those beach whales don't do too good. So, but this dinosaur, not as big as a blue whale, but still pretty impressive as the biggest land animal of all time.
Yeah, I did not think about how loaded that was, especially considering that the blue whale, like you said, still does exist these days.
Yeah.
So.
But it's still impressive, I think. Even as being a plant eater that walked on four legs.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of looks like the picture that they have in this article, it makes it kind of look like a brontosaurus.
Which I don't know if it's a real dinosaur, but I always get confused about that. I feel like people are saying that the brontosaurus is like a made-up thing, but people know what that looks like, so I think it's okay to refer to the brontosaurus, because that gives an image in people's minds. It's very important to paint a picture, you know?
that's what we're trying to do.
Yes.
With our quality at OPA.
We paint beautiful word pictures, and I think that should be our tagline. But yeah, the cool thing is they were able to find a whole lot of these specimens. So yeah. I guess I might have been like hanging out in one area apparently.
Yeah, and I guess I was, to be honest with you, I was not all that familiar with the idea that they mentioned in the article that they're called titanosaurs.
Oh, this kind of group of dinosaurs.
Yeah, there's a kind of a group of dinosaurs that were just like extra large.
Hmm.
That I guess I was like, I thought that they were plenty large to start with.
Right. I mean, that's kind of like what you think of with dinosaurs. But there's also small ones, right, Kevin? We got like those
Velociraptors.
Who could forget the Velociraptors from
Jurassic Park?
Jurassic Park, yes. And the sequels, I believe. Although I don't think I ever saw them, but I'm pretty sure there's Velociraptors in the sequels. Those were not that big, but still dinosaurs. And there's ones that are even smaller than those. You know, down to like chicken-sized little dinosaurs.
And there are
still considered dinosaurs.
Flying dinosaurs that are birds.
Yes, there's still the avian dinosaurs that you could say still are with us today.
In a much smaller form.
Yeah,
those damn crazy pterodactyls.
But for some reason, some of the dinosaurs got super huge. And those have a pretty rad name, I would say, titanosaurs.
So I guess that was something. I do not keep up with my dinosaur lingo. I probably should, considering my nephew's love of dinosaurs. But yeah,
you would definitely earn some cool uncle points there if you could lay down some knowledge like that. I would think titanosaur. I mean, what kid wouldn't love saying that?
yep.
Or the Patago Titan. I guess the idea is this is that was the scientific name for this.
For Patagonia.
It's from Patagonia, and it's big.
Which is essentially Argentina in the modern world.
Yes. And being big, it's Titan, so Patago Titan. Which just, it's not bad, I guess. There's a lot of tongue twister names out there when it comes to the scientific names for animals. So,
right,
this one could be a lot worse.
I would have to say that our tongues were a little bit twisted by the Beltane beers plural this week.
Yes, and they were quite tasty, but also quite at least the first one I think was 8% alcohol.
Yes, the first one was 8%, and I do believe that they're, 8.2, both of them.
So, no, if it does sound like we were a little bit, I don't know, looser than normal, that could have been something to do with it this week.
It was two beers, which I got a while ago. It was the beginning of the new Columbus Ale Trail, Columbus Beer Week. So it was quite a bit back there, several months, that I got this, got these beers in mind specifically for the show. I like the Chester Copper Pot Alt Smoked Alt Beer from the fine brewer in town named Seventh Son.
Yeah, I'm glad we started with that one. That was the darker one.
And we started with, they were both Chester Copper Pot. It was just that one was the 2015 version.
Oh.
One was the 2016.
See, that's interesting because I feel like I can definitely taste a difference.
Oh, yeah, there is clearly a difference. To me, the first one was a little bit lighter and not quite as malty as the second one. This one had a little more ruby color to it, where the other one was definitely ruby, but was a little, had a little more clarity to it.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them, like, that right smoking is so hard to do, and they get the right amount of smoke into both of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's clearly a difference between the two of them. I'm very pleased. Like, I really, this is one of my favorite beers that they put out, just period, before kind of these specialty bottles. And I also remember trying the 2017 version, I believe, when we were there picking up these bottles.
Yeah.
So yeah, they all kind of had their own little flavor to them, but it's definitely in the same neighborhood. I think that can be said too.
Yes, that's fair. It's something, if you're in the Columbus area, worth checking out. I really do like their other beers as well. Somehow we're not getting paid for this, but Seventh Son Brewery, it's a good place to stop by.
Okie dokie. Well, I'm at DeFrango11. He's at Gozer33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. That is your Bell Time Beer of the Week. Everybody, have a good evening.
See ya.